City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Kelly Simpkins.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Queercast show number 366. I'm Amy Matheny.
I'm Kelly Simpkins.
And we're hanging out on the couch in my house.
We are.
And we've just gotten back from, we've been doing a lot of traveling, mm-hmm. You and I.
We have.
You and me. What's that from?
I don't know, Amy.
We're a couple. No. No, Victor Victoria.
Oh, yeah.
Victor Victoria I've for 10,000.
I would go home penniless.
You would go home penniless.
It's sad.
It's okay.
All the gays probably...
But I would have gotten 10,000, so that would have been good.
Oh, for your house, it's good.
It's good. We've been traveling, as you all know. We went to Mexico, which I discussed with Mitchell, and then we went down to Tennessee for you to have a little Southern time with me at home, which is rare. You have not been to Tennessee very much.
I've been one time. No, I've been twice actually. I went to Memphis and then I went home to see your folks. This was three.
Yeah, you like Tennessee?
I think it's gorgeous. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful green, plush, tree-lined. I'm becoming very fond of the South. Let's just say that.
Do you feel awkward being a gay person in the South? Are you aware of your homosexuality more when you're there than you are here? Or
not any more than when I'm in Indiana or those kind of places? No.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't automatically think someone's going to shoot my head off, but I feel, you know, I feel very homophobic sometimes when I'm home in Indiana.
Yeah.
And it's a similar kind of feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because, I just forget. I'm in this bubble here, and I kind of forget every time I go home that it's different there. I think we were discussing with some people this past week when we were in New York, which has been our third trip, how bizarre it is to go where it's far more Republican, far more red, as we call it, as opposed to blue state, red state areas. People focusing on different issues are important to them, and definitely social issues being a part of politics in the South is. Mm-hmm. And I guess you say in Indiana, which to me is not the South. I don't know what it is, but it's not the South.
Well, it's Southern Indiana. It's not. You know, thankfully, we all get to choose where we live.
Yeah,
and I have a lot of respect for. I mean, being in Laramie, for example, you mm-hmm. know, a lot of those people there not liking the politics or the homophobia of a particular town, and not everyone obviously is that way in every small town, but really loving the land, loving. So I think it's a really, you know, wonderful thing to stay where you are and be openly gay. But I think it's harder, obviously, than to be gay in Chicago or New York or San Francisco or just bigger cities where there are more people and there's more. You know, outward kind of manifestation of that kind of affection and attention. People just get more used to it.
Yeah.
So it becomes less threatening.
Yeah. Well, it's been
and there are more Democrats. There are more liberals. And there are more people who are just open.
Yeah.
To homosexuality
and diversity, and diversity, differing thoughts and
differing ethnicities, differing religions, differing the difference is less threatening.
Yeah. And yet we were in New York last week. You were there longer than I just popped in for 2 days to watch you in a workshop reading. And it's funny because we walk down the streets there and I hear you say, do you feel like it's more diverse here, it's more liberal here, it's more edgy here, it's, you know, New York? I mean, there can always be something to quantify more, right? I mean, as...
I wasn't talking about...
But you were talking about, like, even with Chicago, like, we compare Chicago to small-town Tennessee, and then yet you can even compare New York City to Chicago as, is it as open? Is it as diverse?
Well, I've talked to a lot of people in Chicago who feel, as I do, that the neighborhoods here are much more... That the diversity is
in the neighborhoods, not in... It's like you go to a neighborhood and you can know you're going to see more
that
of
the mixes are not as apparent.
Right,
that the
right.
Polish people stay in their Polish neighborhood. Hispanics stay in the Hispanic neighborhood. Irish stay in a predominantly Irish neighborhood.
The Gabers stay in the Gabers.
The Gabers stay in the Gabers. And in New York, it just feels like, you know, you walk out on the street and you see different colors and you hear different languages. And I don't feel a sense of that nearly as... Mm-hmm. As strong as I do there, here. I just
they have
don't.
No room to stretch out there. I'm sure they'd probably create neighborhoods.
Maybe.
I mean, you know, the gays have like Christopher Street. They used to have Chelsea, but I don't even think they have Chelsea
anymore.
Oh, they
anymore, totally
they?
Have Chelsea.
Really?
They have everywhere.
They
the gays
have
everywhere.
That's what I'm saying.
There.
They kind of have everywhere. They're on Fifth Avenue. I mean, they are here too, though. Let's be honest. I mean, they're downtown. They're up. We're uptown. We're
yeah.
Everywhere in between Wicker Park, Bucktown, and all around. But, it's just interesting. It's interesting to have traveled as much as we have, you know, out of the country, being in Mexico, we're surrounded by so many Canadians, then to be in Tennessee, kind of small town, back to Chicago, then off to New York, in just such a short span of time, like literally 5 weeks we've been.
And I've been to Indiana in between.
And you've been in Indiana all in all that time. So, we live a big life, Miss Kelly Simpkins. That's what one of my friends was saying this morning. She was just saying, your life, like my social calendar, I'm bored. And I said, I don't even know what that is. I mean, apart from having great Idol events, which guys, we have 2 Idol events coming up. So we're going to be at North End tonight, signing people up at 8 o'clock and starting singing at 9 o'clock. And then this Sunday, how excited am I? I mean, I don't stay out to the witching hour on a Sunday night anymore. I'm just hit that age. But we're going to be at Berlin. And sometimes I don't feel cool enough to be at Berlin, but I'm going to be cool enough to be hosting Gay Idol this Sunday at Berlin, May 23rd. That is going to be such a fun time with a sign up at 9 o'clock, and we're not starting until 10. And that is going to be super, super fun. And I think they're going to have some performers to perform during our voting, and very excited. And we are gearing up, folks, the big wild card for Gay Idol at Roscoe's, and then on to the semifinals at Sidetrack. It's really ramping up. I cannot believe we're heading into the back end of May.
The caboose side.
The caboose side of May. I mean, we're
it's crazy. It's gone so fast, hasn't it, this year? It's like blink gone.
Yeah. I mean, from the fall to now is just felt very fast, and a lot of stuff happening.
Now, why do you feel less than at Berlin? What is this Berlin?
Oh, I don't know. I just think Berlin is
in
like,
Wicker Park? Is it in like a...
No, green? It's right on Belmont. See, you are such the New Yorker. You don't know your gay bars. It's right off the L stop, the red line, Belmont stop. It could not be more centrally located.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Berlin is such a great bar that has, you know, Madonna-rama and used to have Prince night, and can definitely do like the new age punk kind of scene, and very much a late night bar. And the guys who run it are just the best. I mean, met with them to talk about Idol and said, you know, we'd love to bring Idol here for the first year. And so we're really, really super
excited. Oh, it's
the first
time. Okay, great.
Yeah,
great,
it's the first time we've ever been there.
So go out to Berlin. Go out to Berlin and celebrate. Have some fun times.
Yes.
I don't know who that is,
have
some fun times. That's like Asian or something.
I think
Kelly,
you should come and audition. You make too much money, not as a singer, but as an artist. But it would be fun if you just came out and like did a little karaoke number with me.
I could give people a run for their money.
I think you could.
I really could.
Maybe you should try that.
Maybe I should.
Maybe you'll be at Berlin and people can meet you.
What's the dollar amount that's the winning amount?
$100.
And a bicycle?
$100. Well, for this, 100? It's just 100. It's $1,000 for the grand. For the big.
And a bike?
I don't know if there's a bike this year. American Airline tickets, though.
Damn.
See, it's good stuff.
Get out. If you got any kind of voice, if you got even a scratchy, like, phlegmy voice, come out to Berlin and sing it up.
Yeah, exactly. A shot of Bacardi will help that scratchy, phlegmy voice. Exactly. So I want to talk about our big week in New York because it was uber gay and uber cool. And you and I thought it was awesome. I mean, whether you guys listening think it was or not, we'll let you know. You'll tell us, I guess. But there's a lot going on in the news. This new Supreme Court nominee. What are we all saying about her as a GLBT community? What she's saying or her friends saying. Also, what's going on in the entertainment scene. The daytime Emmys were announced this week. And the theater shows just keep popping up. So it's a great time to go out and catch a play. I know we're going up to Writers Theater this week to see Streetcar Named Desire. And Richard Knight Jr. has his review of the new Queen Latifah movie. And I'll just say that's relevant to the gay community because it's relevant to the gay community.
Because she's a queen.
Because she's a something. And Queen Latifah in Just Right, Richard Knight Jr. giving us his review. Is it just right to go out to see this film? And are you even interested? And then Kelly and I'll be back and we'll tell you about some of our exciting times in Nueva York.
That was bad.
That was bad. I can't.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi there. I'm a Miller Lite Brewmaster.
And I'm a Miller Lite Drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
You know, most people know that Miller Lite tastes great, but up until now, only brewmasters like me knew why.
Well, most people know that my friends and I are the most dominating presence in the Kalamazoo Western Division Level 3 Softball League, but very few know why.
Huh. You see, we add the hops first for flavor, second for balance, and a third time to lock in the great Pilsner taste by enhancing the foamy head.
Yeah, well, we don't need fancy softball strategery to win.
We call it the triple hops brewing process.
Well, we call it heart, Mr. Man.
We're on the same team here. I thought you would appreciate this new information.
I apologize. I just wish I had something as important to share.
Well, buy a six-pack of Miller Lite and you will.
Miller Lite brewmasters have to know the ins and outs of triple hops brewing. The only thing you have to do is enjoy the great-tasting light beer. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News.
In Georgia, St. John's Lutheran Church has reinstated pastors and partners Bradley Schmeling and Darren Easler. The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America removed Schmeling and Easler from its roster of pastors in 2007 after Schmeling came out.
The Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Community Center of Baltimore will open a drop-in facility for LGBT youths. The facility will provide services ranging from HIV testing to tutoring. The youth center is seeking grants and funding to cover annual expenses that may be as much as $600,000.
In Florida, the Leon County Commission has approved a change to the county's human rights ordinance to incorporate protections for the LGBT community in the areas of workplace discrimination, public accommodations, general provisions, and housing. The issue created a schism within the county with hundreds of calls and emails from the ordinance's supporters and detractors.
In Massachusetts, an 8-year-old boy was rejected from a Roman Catholic school because of his mother's sexual preference. The woman said that St. Paul's Church in Hingham told her it was not accepting her son because her same-sex relationship was in discord with church teachings. The woman said, "I'm accustomed to discrimination at my age as a gay woman, but I didn't expect it against my child."
In New Jersey, a campaign by the local chapter of commentator Glenn Beck's conservative 9.12 project has led to a gay anthology being banned. Revolutionary Voices, a collection of stories and other works by gay teens, was banned from Rancocas Valley Regional High School after the 9.12 Project's campaign. Lambda Legal has written to the school board in response.
In Puerto Rico, Juan Jose Martinez Matos has pled guilty for the brutal murder of gay teenager Jorge Steven Lopez Mercado, which occurred last November. Matos, who had been charged with stabbing Mercado to death before decapitating, dismembering, and burning his body, was scheduled to go on trial May 17th. The judge immediately sentenced Matos to 99 years in prison.
The Iowa Department of Natural Resources is planning to alter its policy to recognize gay families. Iowa Republican State Senator Merlin Bartz is opposed to changing state policy to include families headed by same-sex couples. However, the department is simply complying with Iowa's anti-discrimination statute.
Friends of Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan insists that she is not a lesbian. Sarah Walter, a close friend and ex-law school roommate, said, "I've known her for most of my adult life and I know she's straight." Former New York Governor Elliot Spitzer also weighed in. "I did not go out with her, but other guys did." Former Bush aide Ben Domenech wrote in April that if Kagan were selected for the court, she would be the first openly gay justice. This debate has sprouted several columns asking if her orientation matters at all.
Evangelical minister Ted Haggard, who was ousted from his 14,000-member New Life Church in 2006 after admitting to a gay affair, has formed a new church in the same city, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Haggard told a newspaper that St. James may become a full church in the future, adding that the church was incorporated for accounting purposes.
In world news, in Canada, activists are criticizing Prime Minister Stephen Harper's government for refusing to fund Toronto's Gay Pride Festival this year after providing $400,000 last year. Industry Minister Tony Clement said that the turnaround has nothing to do with anti-gay feelings among members of the ruling Conservative caucus. However, others feel that homophobia was indeed behind the decision. The decision came after recent governmental cuts to women's groups and a refusal to fund abortion.
In Scotland, 17-year-old Craig Roy has been charged with the murder of 16-year-old openly gay classmate Jack Frew. Frew's body was found in a forest near Glasgow. He had been beaten and stabbed.
The Russian gay film festival Side by Side was banned in the Siberian city of Kemerovo on April 17th after the venue director received threats if the films were to run. However, in Novosibirsk, Russia's third largest city, 700 people attended the four-day event and local media supported the festival.
Despite initially being canceled, Lithuania held its first gay march amid protests. Approximately 500 individuals took part while police held back about 1,000 protesters. A court had banned the parade, but the decision was overturned on appeal.
A Palestinian man was arrested after robbing a British tourist with offers of gay sex. The suspect convinced the tourist to drive to the Israeli Arab village of Tira to pick up money from a friend. However, the men pulled up under a bridge and started engaging in sexual acts. Then the suspect threw the Brit out of the car and drove away with the tourist's clothes. The victim had to walk naked to a nearby gas station for help.
In England, an Oxford University poll found that 20% of male students have had a same-sex fling, but only 35% classified themselves as heterosexual. The study also showed that almost half of the respondents said that they watched gay porn, while half of the gay and lesbian students have come out to their families.
In entertainment news, Newsweek writer Ramin Sotoudeh has defended his recent article, Straightjacket, that criticized certain gay actors for their believability, or lack thereof, in hetero roles. Broadway star Kristen Chenoweth called the gay journalist's article horrendously homophobic. Sotoudeh responded by saying, "I meant to open a debate. For all the talk about progress in the gay community in Hollywood, has enough really changed? The answer seems obvious to me. No, it has not."
The Daytime Emmy nominations have ABC's General Hospital leading with 18 nods. The Ellen DeGeneres Show received 8 nominations, while Oprah Winfrey's Show received 4. Winfrey has permanently removed herself from consideration.
The California Marriage Equality Organization, the Courage Campaign, has launched Testimony, Equality on Trial, a response to the judicial decision to ban cameras from the federal Proposition 8 trial. Testimony not only urges guerrilla-style readings, but also has a website with reenactments by Marissa Tomei, Josh Lucas, Cheyenne Jackson, Patricia Clarkson, and Michael Urey. Visit equalityontrial.org.
British hip-hop artist Lady Sovereign has come out as a lesbian. The 24-year-old former Jay-Z protege said, "You can't hide away forever. It's just stupid, and now that I've come out, I feel a lot more comfortable with myself."
Rosie O'Donnell debated former GOP presidential candidate Mike Huckabee on her radio show on May 8th over the issue of gay adoption. Huckabee, who earlier this year criticized gay adoption when he commented, "Children are not puppies," said during the debate that, "I think the ideal environment for children is in a relationship that has both a mother and a father." O'Donnell, who has adopted several children, responded, "This has been the focus of my life, so it's very, very painful to hear a heterosexual man who was at one time a pastor disparage my very essence just because of my sexual orientation."
Elizabeth Taylor is criticizing Dr. Arnold Klein, the late Michael Jackson's dermatologist, for saying that Jackson was gay. Taylor, a longtime friend of Jackson, said that Klein violated patient confidentiality policies by saying that.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
I'm Richard Knight Jr., and here's your Night at the Movies Minute. In Just Right, an urban romance starring lesbian favorite Queen Latifah, she plays Leslie Wright, hence the cutesy poo title, a physical therapist who dates on a regular basis but can't find a man to settle down with. Her cousin Morgan, played by Paula Patton, who also played the lesbian teacher in Precious, on the other hand, is a gorgeous man trap, determined to snag pro basketball player Scott McKnight, played by the rapper Common, and jump into the good life in one fell swoop. But it's Leslie who meets cute with Scott at a gas station and gets a coveted invitation to his birthday party. Naturally, she brings along Morgan, and before you can say Ivana Trump, the hunter has captured her prey. However, when Scott hurts his knee, she insists that Leslie handle his physical therapy. Soon, Morgan's bored staying home, and the relationship begins to teeter, just as love vibes and hormones are rising between Scott and Leslie, who has been nursing a secret desire for him all along. Romantic complications ensue on the bumpy road to love, with plenty of action on the basketball court thrown in for sports fans as well. Just Right is about as fresh as a bouquet of wilted spring flowers. But it's not inventiveness or originality that makes the movie so endearing and welcome in the coming season of summer blockbusters. It's the familiarity and old-fashionedness that is the key that makes Just Right, well, just right. Hee-hee-hee. I can't believe it. Just wrote that. Oh my God, I said it too. Much of that is due to the enormous amount of goodwill and humor that Queen Latifah brings to every scene, and audiences respond overwhelmingly to her. She has enough good chemistry, believe it or not, with her co-star Common to make you believe that she's really falling for him, and boy, is he easy on the eyes. Patton does what she can with her two-dimensional part and looks sensational, while Pam Grier, Felicia Rashad, and others are on hand to offer support in tissue-thin roles. It will be easy for queer audiences to project their own fantasies onto Just Right. In her sweats, basketball jersey, and passion for the game, Leslie's one of those old-fashioned, stereotypical tomboys, a.k.a. a dyke hiding in plain sight that lesbian audience members will easily be able to translate for themselves. So ladies, take your girlfriend, your wife, and indulge in a little fantasy role-playing afterwards. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Minute.
You want to learn to play tennis in no time? Chicago's Midtown Tennis Club has the country's only patented tennis teaching program to turn beginners into players in just 3 short weeks, with sessions beginning June 5th. During Tennis in No Time, participants will learn the basics, including the forehand, backhand, and serve in a fun group atmosphere. Best of all, Tennis in No Time is affordable, even in today's economic climate. Enrollment costs $115 and includes a 3-week membership to the Midtown Tennis Club, 2 social parties, and 9 hours of instruction from the country's best pros for only $115. That's less than $20 for each hour and a half lesson. Midtown Tennis Club is located in the heart of Chicago's Lincoln Park at 2020 West Fullerton Avenue. For more information on Tennis in No Time, visit midtown.com/Chicago.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of May 17th, 2010, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Jane M. Sachs, the Ellen Stone Bellick Institute for the Study of Women and Gender at Columbia, and About Face Theater present Sweet Tea, Black Gay Men of the South. Dynamic author and performer E. Patrick Johnson inhabits the interviewees from his book about Black gay Southern life. Sweet Tea runs through May 29th only at the Viaduct Theater, 3111 Northwestern Avenue. Visit viaducttheater.com.
Million Dollar Quartet is a hit, raves the Chicago Tribune. On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the new rock and roll musical Million Dollar Quartet. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com.
Lifeline Theater concludes its 27th anniversary main stage season with a world premiere adaptation of Neil Gaiman's best-selling novel, Neverwhere. Playing Thursday through Sunday nights through June 20th. For more, go to lifelinetheater.com.
See the legendary Liza Minnelli Sunday, June 6th at the Chicago Theater. The Tony, Emmy, Grammy, and Academy Award-winning Liza Minnelli will dazzle audiences with a glamorous evening of show-stopping hits and songs from her upcoming new CD. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com. Don't miss this rare, one-night-only concert event. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Cherry Jones, and you are listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Okay, so we were in New York. You were doing a...
Nueva York.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
I roll my eyes while I say it like
you do.
So we were in New York for... you were there for work. I was there to watch you work in a reading, a workshop reading that was kind of hosted by Tectonic Theater Project and the Labyrinth Theater. Or at least in the Labyrinth Theater
It was
space.
In the Labyrinth Theater space, but it was entirely hosted by Tectonic.
Okay, entirely hosted by Tectonic. Of course, the creators of the Laramie Project, the company that you work with. On this new play that you've been involved with for 4 years, based on the life of Charlotte Cushman. Mm-hmm. So who is Charlotte Cushman?
Charlotte Cushman was in the Victorian age, considered the...
That'd be the mid-1800s.
Right.
Essentially.
Considered the greatest actress of her time, both in America, and she went to England and lived for a little while and became extremely famous there. She was she played numerous roles, hundreds of roles, a lot in the Shakespeare lexicon, and she was very, very famous for playing men, for playing breeches parts. So although she was equally as famous for playing women, Meg Merrilies, Lady Macbeth. She had a lot of fame in a lot of these roles, but she was very masculine looking. Mm-hmm. She
played Hamlet.
She played Hamlet. She
Romeo.
Played a lot
that
of the men. She played Cardinal Wolsey. She played a lot of...
Romeo was really one of her big
Romeo
roles.
Was one of her very big roles. Right. Absolutely. She played, several hundred, really. She played a lot. She had a huge, huge
And
repertoire.
We would say, just to put it in context, that, obviously, folks, there were not movies at that time.
Right.
So she would have been the greatest actress of the time. So who, that would be Sandra Bullock or Julia Roberts.
She was like the
Meryl Streep
of her day.
Of her day.
That kind of respect.
And the box office draw, she made millions. She had millions of dollars.
The equivalent of what would be millions of dollars today at the end of her life. And she started a salon in Rome with really as a patron to all these younger female artists, painters and sculptors and writers, and really wanted to be kind of this not mama figure, but
mentor.
And it was found out she had a wife and she had a young lover. Wasn't known at the time because that was the Victorian, women were with women, lived with women unsuspiciously in that time. And it was found... a woman named Lisa Merrill wrote a book called When Romeo Was a Woman and unearthed at the Library of Congress all these letters that she had written and what was supposed to be to a man was actually to her young lover, mm-hmm. who she married off to her nephew. So it's full of intrigue, full of...
So she had a lot of female lovers. I mean, yes. She was a lesbian. She was self-identified. I mean, she yes. probably didn't call it lesbian.
She didn't call
there,
it that,
I don't
that,
know, there was
but...
a word. I don't know if the word lesbian was even... There's a derivative of lesbian in the mid-1800s. I don't believe that word was actually in... I don't believe it was a word.
I don't know that it was a word at that time. And it was, sexuality was just very, very different.
Yes.
Sex and sexuality was very
but
different.
But it was not accepted, obviously. I mean, she if it was known, and yet in some ways people knew but didn't speak of it, that she had women...
Women didn't show their bodies. I mean, right. Women didn't, you know, show their ankles. They would go to, you know, see these shows that... what's her name who writes all those Victorian lesbian novels? Sarah Waters writes about.
Sarah Waters.
It's very much in the time of, like, Tipping the Velvet, where you would see body parts and people would just go apeshit.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't... Sex was just a very, very different notion then.
Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is that, you know, we do have actresses now that we know who, you know, when it was just the stage, when the theater was, you know, Sandra Bernhardt being obviously probably one of the most well-known. Mm-hmm. Sarah Bernhardt, sorry, Sandra. You're well-known, but not in the same way Sarah is. Sarah Bernhardt. But for some reason, she's just, there's this black hole and she's missing and people don't know much about her. Well, you've done this workshop many, many times. A mm-hmm. lot of actresses have been involved in the workshops, and Lisa Crone, who starred in Well, portrayed Cushman.
One of the five lesbian brothers. One of the Cushmans.
And Ellen McLaughlin, who was the original Angel in Angels in America, mm-hmm. Had portrayed this. But every time that this workshop came up, and the writer, Lee Fondakowski, who was the head writer on the Laramie and is a friend of ours, you know, she would always say, well, it's Cherry Jones. It's Cherry Jones of our time. And for those of you who don't know who Cherry Jones is, I've interviewed her many times over the years. She's an openly lesbian actress that's won Tony Awards and won an Emmy last year at the Emmys for playing the president on 24, and is currently still playing the president on 24 until the big series finale here mm-hmm. in a week. So she's garnered some attention now. She's made a lot of movies. And so Cherry Jones, done with filming 24, was back in New York and signed on to kind of do this workshop with mm-hmm. you all, which is huge because you and I have both been huge fans of hers before you and I even knew each other. I mean, as young lesbian women of the theater.
I even knew I was a lesbian.
Before you even knew. I knew I was a
lesbian.
Well,
I knew, but before
I was out.
Before the official newsletter came.
Yeah, I mean, I was out when I first heard of her and remembered going to New York specifically to see her in shows, you know, off-Broadway and on-Broadway. And it was really amazing to see somebody who actually is the greatest actress on... one of the greatest actresses on English-speaking stages, which is one of the lines mm-hmm. In reference to Charlotte. Say that line,
yeah.
You know? What did you think? I mean, what did you think of what do you think of this story and how relevant it is to people to know who she was, Charlotte Cushman?
Well, you know, there's a lot of speculation about why her legacy has been lost historically. And I think one of the suspicions about the loss of her in the kind of history books is because she was lesbian or because it was found out that she was lesbian. Mm-hmm. I don't know the truth of that, but I can certainly understand why that is a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's a fascinating, fascinating figure,
mm-hmm.
Both in terms of her artistry and her creativity, all the letters that she didn't leave behind, but that were...
Yeah, she told all of her lovers to burn
the letters.
The letters, right. and a few
I don't
of
want
them,
to give too much away because no. I hope that a lot of people get to see it.
Yeah.
At some point in the near future, but one of her lovers saved all of these letters, which is, you know, kind of a coup for us, certainly doing this project, but for mm-hmm. everyone to have access to what she was thinking and feeling. And she wrote several letters a day. And she was, you know, wildly, wildly volatile in her desires and, you know, had a lot of the same conflicts that we have about mm-hmm. career and
love. She was very contemporary. I mean, when you hear, at least in this play, I mean, obviously, you know, it's set in the 1800s, but she's a very contemporary voice in that she struggled with monogamy, struggled with wanting to support women in the arts, struggled with, you know, coming face to face with men and how they would value her in her profession and how she wanted to be valued.
But very, very bright, very, very strong.
Very smart. Very,
I mean, she got paid as much as men got paid in that time. And we're still not doing that today for the most part. So she, you know, had a sense of herself and a sense of her footprint on the earth in mm-hmm. a very powerful way that women just lack. So I think she was very, very special. And I think, you know, this play is both a beautiful kind of representation of her desire and her conflict and her career, mm-hmm. But also of lesbian love and kind of our history.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be gloriously theatricalized mm-hmm. When we get to do it. And we've had several workshops that are up on our feet, not simply behind music stands. But I think it's, I think Cherry Jones kind of hung the moon for me. And
man,
just to be in a room with her as a working professional was really a dream come true for me. And I think she speaks that part in a very simple and in a very deeply powerful and strong way. She doesn't have to do a lot to make that character come to life. And I think a lot of people have really put a lot of energy and you know, been extremely theatrical in their representation of Charlotte Cushman, which I think is also true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been fascinating to watch, you know, a gamut of mm-hmm. actors play that role mm-hmm. and to see how they interpret her.
Mm-hmm.
Her genius, her strength, her conflict, her desire, her lesbianism, her outspokenness, her, you know, power, all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Cherry is kind of picture perfect to play that role.
Yeah. And she's so lovely. I mean, we should, Cherry invited us to go out afterward, and a bunch of us went to a very, I don't know, I would just say kind of an inside the belly of New York Broadway theater bars, restaurants. I mean, a bar restaurant that if you're walking past it, there's no sign. You don't even know that it's a restaurant or bar. It kind of snuck away off in there and hung out with her and had drinks and food and talked. And, you know, she's also from Tennessee, and she had just been home and was... you know, very much talking about the flooding mm-hmm. that came right after she left, she was there like right after the waters had just kind of gone down in her area. And, you know, but very much just down home Southern kind of girl, you know. And
she's the kind of person, and she's always been this way. And, you know, the beautiful thing, and I don't know her that well, but she was very dear to me at a very young age when I wrote her a fan letter.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up having dinner, and she, you know, wrote me back. And it's just kind of unheard of. But she doesn't seem any different to me with the amount of fame that she's gotten. And it is one of those visions that, you know, you always want to have of somebody that you greatly admire
mm-hmm.
that they have as much grace and as much dignity as she has and exhibits. I mean, she paid for all of us to go out. She could not have been more interested in any number of us who were at that
table. Like, come on, let's go take pictures. And we all took pictures together and pictures with her.
She's just an example of a wonderful, you know, what I would aspire to be if I ever had the kind of career that I long to have.
Yeah.
And that we all, you know, can look at somebody like that who is so human, so kind. Mm-hmm.
Well, and she's worked with some huge names.
I mean,
beyond who all she's worked with in New York and on Broadway. I mean, she's worked with Julia Roberts. She was in Erin Brockovich. She's worked with Mel Gibson in Signs, the M. Night Shyamalan film. She was in The Perfect Storm with Clooney. Is Clooney in Perfect Storm? Who's in Perfect Storm? And Diane Lane.
I think so.
you know, I think she was in the Yaya Sisterhood with that whole group of people, because I think she was the one who encouraged Ashley Judd to go to Broadway with Cat on a Hot Tin Roof and kind of told her, if you go, you need to sit down and be in it for about 9 months to really understand a role. And, you know, and I just think...
there is no diva or grand dame-ness about her whatsoever.
Yeah. We tried to
get... That is so just glorious to me. It's just kind of breathtaking.
Yeah. We tried to get the dirt on Starbuck, i.e. Katie Sackhoff, who was on 24 and very much reviled on 24, I believe, her character and everything. But, of course, if you're a Battlestar Galactica fan or if you watch Nip Tuck, had some episodes on Nip Tuck. But Cherry didn't have any scenes with her, so really didn't...
didn't know the skinny.
Didn't know too much of the skinny. But, you know, it was really such an exciting New York night and just a lot of fun. And you were fantastic in the workshop and all of the performers were so good.
Thank you. It really took a... I was so proud of Lee. And I know Sarah and Greg have been helping her, but I think it really, you know, it's almost done.
It's on its way.
I think it's taken a huge leap forward, and I was just so... happy for her to, you know, have the cast that we had and to really be able to hear the play in front of a very, what I thought to be a very kind of enthusiastic, very open, very receptive and responsive audience.
Well, and it is gay, 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 gay right now on Broadway. Gay, I mean, it's pretty damn gay. I mean,
it's not lesbian, it's gay.
Well, it's just
high time we bring some...
We need some lesbians. But I'm just saying, the Tony Award nominations have come out.
No, you're right. You're right, and I'm thrilled for that.
And whether they got Tony Award nominations or not, I mean, Lakaja Fole with Kelsey Grammer has gotten a lot of nominations. And we should say Levi Kreiss, who's been on our show many times for Million Dollar Quartet right here in Chicago, is featured actor in a musical nomination, which is so good. And I knew he was going to get that nomination, and I so hope he wins.
Did anyone else get one from there?
No, I don't think so.
He was the only one? Him. Jerry
Lee Lewis portrays it so well and is openly gay and a singer-songwriter in his own right and friend of the Queer Cast. Also, you know, there's just all these shows right now in New York that have these gay themes. You know, The Temperamentals right now on Broadway with
next fall.
Michael Urie, who starred in Ugly Betty. And then also Next Fall, which is Jeffrey Knopf's new play that is produced by Elton John and his partner, David Furnish. And this is their first foray into something that's not musical, that's a play. And I'd heard so much about it, you know, about being, you know, a play about religion and homosexuality, and a very moving play. And so I got his tickets, and I was so disappointed. I have to say, I know it's nominated for some awards, and I felt like it was, you know, a gay play for straight people, with a lot of gay people in the audience wishing it was a gay play for gays. Although I think people were laughing, and people were crying, and it was definitely moving. But I guess, as you know, if you listen to any of the podcasts or have listened to me on the radio over the years, that I've really always wanted to talk about spirituality and the gay community and try to bring that conversation together, as opposed to those conversations don't belong in the same place unless it's a Christian person saying gay people are bad. And I really had high hopes. Maybe my expectations were too high. But I just really felt like, well, that's compelling and interesting if you've never thought about the contradiction of homosexuality in Christianity. I don't know. What about you? I mean, I know it's not your type of theater because you like theater to be more theatrical, to have more theater to it, not just... You're not so akin to the play that's just people talking and you could really
sofas
be a film.
Sitting,
or...
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, if those are done well, I don't mind those. I kept wanting to have an experience that I didn't have. I felt like it was kind of a sketch of itself in a weird way. Like it did not embody any of its truths in any kind of whole... I wasn't drawn in. It felt a little bit like caricatures and a little bit two-dimensional to me.
Yeah.
And I didn't find it theatrically that interesting, although I thought the performances were really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know... that it said anything unique.
Yeah.
Although I thought some of the writing was incredibly witty.
Yes.
And, you know, had knee-jerk laughter.
Mm-hmm.
But
it was,
you know,
fairly thin. I thought the conversation, the conversation being had was fairly thin.
Yeah.
And that I think that we're better than that now in 2010, we can have a deeper conversation than that play wanted us to have. I felt like that play had a conversation that we started having in the 80s as a gay community and a straight community talking about, you know.
Well, I didn't know what it was saying other than, I guess it's what you're saying, other than the kind of generic generalities that we've always had about these topics. I mean, it didn't have a strong point of view.
Well, I mean, I think the point of view was merely that some gay people reside in their faith of origin and reconcile themselves to the fact they're gay and the sin that that brings to their lives. And I think, well, that's such an old story. We are so past that. We are in a conversation now where churches are trying to find a new place, you know, for...
But for the born-again Christian world, and many, I'm sure many people are gay in that world.
Yeah.
It must be they must really deeply grapple with their spirituality and their homosexuality. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I don't know that the play was even really about that or whether it was about the parents and the father, who, you know. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just didn't feel drawn into it. I didn't feel moved by it.
Well, or even just
even
a
though
play,
I wanted to feel moved by it.
Yeah. Even a play, though, about... you know, to me, too, it was about, because we're watching this play through the eyes of a lover who is not a Christian. And when I say Christian, I mean an evangelical believer of the rapture. The Bible is the literal word of God.
Mm-hmm.
Christian. Mm-hmm. That is not all Christians, but that was who the other gay guy was and what he was raised in Texas as and continues to follow and believe. And what I found in that was that it created, it could have been an even more interesting conversation about being with someone in self-loathing.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that. And it wasn't a conversion play. And it wasn't, you know, I don't know. I agree. I mean, I just think that there were many conversations that could have been had, and the one they chose to have was just like the bare bones. I was going to say the bare nuts, and maybe I shouldn't say that.
Say bare nuts.
The bare nuts of the...
Is it better that it's there or not?
I don't think it is. Mm-hmm. It, you know, I really don't. I feel like... I don't know. I'm very interested. I really haven't read... I had read quotes on their ads, and somebody mentioned the play to me, but I hadn't read in-depth reviews. I kind of tend to not want to. If I just hear a couple of poppy things about a play, I like to go like that, because if I read too many reviews, then it spoils mm-hmm. to me the experience of walking in and experiencing a play.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But anyhow.
I don't know. It's just like, what is that phrase? I keep feeling like I have early Alzheimer's, because little phrases or words that are like right here, I can't.
You're just tired.
Water's down.
You're not drinking caffeine these days.
Oh, I just did have some caffeine.
That's though. It. It's screwed you up, girl. How many days without a cigarette? How many days without caffeine? Well, you had caffeine.
3 months without a cigarette.
3 months without a cigarette. Woohoo! Kelly Simpkins.
I think I've saved like 12 days out of my life.
Yeah. How many dollars?
Gosh, almost 1,000 now.
Look at that.
I think it's like 800 and something.
Look at that.
Crazy. Crazy. And why don't I feel like I have $800 more? Like, you know, I could see a duffel bag with $800.
Because you've been five trips in like
duffel bag.
Six
what
weeks.
Am I saying? It's $800. It's not in a duffel bag.
Well, it's because you watched
it's
television
because
show.
I watched Damages yesterday.
Duffel bag.
Seeing a duffel bag.
But seriously, I mean, think of all the traveling and things you've gotten to do, and you haven't had to step outside and smoke every day.
Oh, but I've wanted to.
I know you have, but it's very good. It's good for the lesbian community. Yay! That one less lesbian is
one
not
less
smoking.
Stinky lesbian mouth.
We appreciate it. I appreciate it, and so does
I think
listening.
Everyone does.
I think everyone does. So, guys, I mean, I guess the point is if you get a chance to go to New York, maybe go check out Next Fall for yourself if you don't agree with us. But there are a lot of offerings right now in New York. And the Tony Awards will be coming out the first week in June, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that after the awards ceremony. But Cherry Jones, she's awesome, and she'll be at the Roundabout this fall doing a play, Mrs. Warren's Profession. So,
and what's the finale of 24?
Finale of 24 is here next week, so I guess we'll have to set our TiVos and watch if the president survives. Isn't it always like it's the president? They all die, so I hope she doesn't die. That would be quite tragic. Although if she does it, she'll act the shit out of it. Mm-hmm. So it'll be great. Mm-hmm. I hope she has one of those where she's crawling or gasping or constantly reviving and coming back to life. That's the kind of death I wish for you, Cherry Jones, on 24. Very grand.
Dramatic.
Very grand and dramatic. Hey, folks, right here in our own backyard, if you have not seen Billy Elliot, this is actually an Elton John produced play musical that I think Run, Don't Walk. Next
podcast. So one for two, Elton.
One for two. He's really good. He's done pretty well in his little career, I believe. Billy Elliot is just the most amazing show. I could see it many, many times, and I'm sure I will if it stays around here in Chicago. Right now, it's playing into the summer, into August, and next podcast, I'm going to be talking with one of the cast members of Billy Elliot, kind of giving us an inside skinny on all things Billy, and so definitely be sure to tune in for that, and hopefully, I will see you at one of the Idol events this week. I really, really hope to either come out tonight at the North End or Berlin on Sunday, and we really hope we see you there. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.